welcome to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, demanding more cowbell of that song before we even got on air. So maybe double it up or something one of these days. I don't know.
Double the cowbell.
Double.
I don't know.
More cowbell, please.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. You can tell it's almost a long weekend. It's not as punchy as usual, but we will today talk about Canada's 150th birthday, and we'll do that by tearing down the celebration banners and erecting our own metaphorical protest teepees of outrage to talk about all the things Canada could be doing better. And then we will welcome back our returning champion, Ward 5 Councillor Kathy Downer. City Hall has another month of work before its summer vacation, and we will ask Councillor Downer about all the doings there. But first, Parliament officially went on summer vacation itself this weekend, or this week, capping off a contentious winter and spring legislative sessions with a press conference where Prime Minister Justin Trudeau seemed a little bit testy. So, Scotty, how do you think the PM and company did this past term?
Yeah, that final note there, the testy and defensive, was a bit... I think it was Andrew Coyne, I think, among others, wrote about it. Mm-hmm. National Post, talking about how he was pretty much just blaming the Conservatives for a lot of the things, promises not kept, like the ballooning deficit. He blamed the blockage in the Senate or near blockage in the Senate of the budget bill. And the fact that electoral reform failed, he was pretty much passing the buck saying, you know what?
Yeah.
It's Conservatives' fault. That's the short version. There was
The NDP had some fault there.
And the NDP is, you know, anybody, ABT, anybody but Trudeau. So that was not, I wouldn't say surprising, but a little bit to some degree, considering what they had accomplished. Because they had accomplished quite a bit, a lot of their mandate. I think a lot of it has already happened. So there's no way to say, okay, we've reached this point. Now it's on to the next thing, because I think they jammed a lot of stuff in the first year, right? So a few things that...
Sophomore slump.
Yes, I guess we're there, because it will be... When will it be? It's the halfway point in October, right?
Give mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. Just remember, we covered the election. there's some other things, too. I didn't mention the electoral reform fail. But, you know, will we be smoking weed on Canada 151? That's still in the pipe. Will we be... I guess some people will be smoking already without the legal repercussions, let's say. But I thought it was really interesting, the showdown with the Senate. And what was it over the alcohol excise duty and the fact that it rises automatically to inflation? Think about it. Wages, lots of things in this country do not automatically rise to inflation. But damn it, they're going to get as much booze tax as possible out of us. Sorry, those of us that do indulge. So... bit of a showdown there, and once again bringing to the fore the whole situation with the Senate, and I guess the Conservative senators were chipping at are they Liberal independent, are they independent, what do we call them now? They're effectively Liberal senators, but they're not.
Well, the new ones are from various political affiliations.
Yes, but then there's the bloc that are
there. Yeah, there's still like people who were appointed as Liberal senators.
Yes, so... bit of sniping back and forth there. I don't know if it's...
But you can't create an independent Senate and then be surprised when they assert independence, I think, is the lesson there.
Yes.
I think you're right, though. It was kind of a silly issue to sort of, like, build a hill to die on. But at the same time, I think that's the lesson of the situation. You do your best to reform the institution to make it relevant, and then when it asserts its relevancy, you can't go, whoa, 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 you guys go back to being a rubber stamp, just like I didn't intend you to be. It's bizarre. The electoral reform I found particularly infuriating, because he comes out and says, look, the NDP wanted PR, Conservatives wanted a referendum, there was nothing I could do, we reached an impasse.
There's so much confusion,
Did you really reach an impasse? Because it didn't seem like there was a lot of quote-unquote trying either. I think when we see in Guelph here with Democracy Guelph and the Guelph solution and local proportional representation, there was a lot of wiggle room to, I think, come to a conclusion. I do agree with him that referendums are tricky, because when we had the last referendum here in 2007, it did go down rather spectacularly. But
the MMP one.
But the thing I will mention about that is whenever I talk about that, it was not advertised well. There was no education component to that. The Ontario Liberal government just said, "Here's this thing. You want to do it?" And it was basically in the name of keeping a campaign promise. Having said that, that was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I can't remember the Conservative MP who proposed this, but I did like his idea of, like, you know, well, let's have a referendum where it's like multiple choice, where you can do like a ranked ballot of what systems you like best. That way you're educating people, you're forcing people to decide about between systems, and that's, I thought that was a good idea. But, I think there was room to negotiate here, and the question remains, was this a serious promise from the get-go, or was he always going to find, like, a convenient excuse not to do it once he secured a majority?
Yeah, you get the impression that it was the latter, that it was just kind of like, oh, we'll kind of talk about it, but... And I think sometimes the language is couched in the, yes, we did, we discussed it, and then we came to the conclusion, but, you know, as we know, that's not exactly
mm-hmm.
a bit of, there's a little bit of spin there. But, mm-hmm. So yeah, the point was made, too, that they've passed less legislation than the Harper government did, the same point in the mandate, and as I said, they'd passed a lot of it before, and a lot of things that they're talking up and things that they have, well, there's some examples of things that have passed. What we talked about a couple weeks ago, medically assisted death, medical assistance in dying, the fact that we're going to put higher tax on people who are making over $200,000. The CPP was raised for quite a few people,
mm-hmm.
and the trade deals that came through, the free trade deal with the Wallonians, and also slid in a free trade deal with the Ukraine, which was a bit of a surprise, but so they're accomplishing.
The EU trade deal is finalized.
And that, yeah, it isn't finalized, or it is, yes.
No, it's finalized.
It's finalized, yes. Yeah. So... It's hard to know. There's so much going on. So that's their list of, well, partial list of accomplishments. So it wasn't a complete fizzle, let's say. So
no, it wasn't a complete
fizzle.
But
they weren't ramming through stuff like the Harper government was. So maybe it remains to be seen what will come down the pipe in October. At which time we will see permanent leaders of, well, Andrew Scheer has appeared already for the Conservatives and has done a bit of sparring with Trudeau. But then, of course, in November, in October, we will see the NDP with their new leader. So all three parties will have their leaders in place, ready to go.
And
ring the bell.
I think that's maybe why he's so comfortable with, with, you know, throwing some blame around. It's because there's, you know, there's really no bad guy to blame in terms of specifics.
Yeah. Build a straw person.
Andrew Scheer, he did this big interview on Power and Politics yesterday, and I'm not sure, you know, I think Trudeau probably has a good cause to think he's probably pretty comfortable electorally speaking, because Scheer gets on Power and Politics and says, oh, no, when we get into office, we're going to do an elected Senate, and until then, I'm going to appoint conservative senators to do conservative things, and it's just like, dude,
didn't get the memo?
Were you not, like, watching from your speaker's chair when stuff went down last Parliament?
That's right, yes. he sees, you know, all, he knows all.
Did that, like, go right by you? Were you having a nap that day? Were you distracted by a bumblebee? Like, what was going on? So he's kind of taking out these old Harper chestnuts.
Yeah.
At the same time, Andrew Scheer's not the most... Let's say...
you're trying to be nice. What is it you're trying
to
say?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to be nice. He's not the life of the party, shall we say.
Yeah. Bit different tack than...
And you
JT
know,
selfie, yes.
Well, yeah, and at the same time, Trudeau's still riding this wave of like, check out my socks. I wear weird socks every day. Word. Deal with it. And then there was a thing on Instagram, and I just tweeted a little while ago, where he like visited the X-Men, because they shoot the X-Men movies in Montreal. Oh, yeah. So he's like there on set with McAvoy and Sophie Turner and like the various X-Men.
You getting a walk-on, or... It's kind of like Harper on Murdoch Mysteries. Is JT going to be in the
I didn't
X-Men?
Say, but that would be cool.
Oh, my God. It's the Prime Minister of Canada. Oh, wouldn't that be gold? That would
but,
be
gold. Well, several key X-Men characters are Canadian. But yeah, so he's kind of doing... And then there was like Pride this last weekend. Harper famously never went to Pride. You know, there's...
And nor will Andrew Scheer, to be real, realistic about it.
We'll get into that in the next segment, but yeah, you know, there was a picture of him over the weekend that was in some like American papers of him at Pride high-fiving a little girl in a Wonder Woman costume, and it's like one of those take that America, because Canada's prime minister is like progressive cool, and which I'm starting to kind of hate because. because just, you know, some of the stuff Donald Trump has been doing just in the last 24 hours would, you know, make having Skeletor as prime minister look like a better deal. And that's
some random backbencher as prime minister would be like, yeah, this is okay. Yeah,
it's like,
this isn't so bad.
Yeah. It's crazy. And that's something else I do want to give Trudeau credit for. He seems to be managing Trump well. And I think that's sort of thrown a lot, you know, talking about legislative things not getting done. I think they've done a lot of big things, which is probably why things have slowed. Harper famously did a lot of little things because he couldn't do the big things. He didn't have the votes and the support. But for Trudeau... It seems to be he's sort of weathering that storm well. They can't get a lot done because every, you know, Trump will wake up tomorrow and think, I'm going to leave NAFTA. And then all of a sudden, your priority is trying to keep the U.S. in NAFTA for one more day. But at the same time, there's been a lot of engagement with the cabinet ministers and then their American counterparts. Mm-hmm. And then on the surface, there's been a lot of hands-off stuff. Trudeau, you know, there isn't, you know, there doesn't seem to be like this buddy-buddy kind of relationship that Trudeau had with Obama, or even maybe Harper had with Obama. I don't think that was a frictional relationship. But I mean, you saw it at the G20 or G7, whatever it was a couple of weeks ago.
One of the G's, yes.
Nobody was hanging around with Trump, including Justin Trudeau.
Trump wasn't hanging around with Trump, though.
Well, Trump was shoving people out of
the golf cart like 10 meters or something.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so it's, I think that has been handled exceptionally well. I think certainly better than I would have handled it if I were Canadian Prime Minister right now.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern when Trump was elected. Remember all the, oh my goodness, how is this going to go down? Yeah. Is it going to be shades of Diefenbaker Kennedy, or is it going to be more... Trudeau is the kind of guy that knows how to handle himself, I think, in possibly any situation.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, separate from being a politician. That's just sort of being a, I don't know, that...
Life experience.
Magnanimous
kind
type
of thing.
I guess. Yeah, life experience for sure, and doing a lot of shaking of hands and maybe trying to harness a bit of your dad's mojo, because I see a lot of echoes of that, and I guess we'll get to that in the 152 when we talk about that. There are a lot of echoes of Trudeau Mania 1, and I think they've his people, his PR, whatever, have kind of harnessed that and are really playing that up with a hefty dose of social media, which didn't exist as much in Pierre Trudeau's time. It was TV, folks, and you had to watch the 6 o'clock news, know what was going on. You don't know every second of the day, so you didn't have it tweeted at you all the time, either by, you know, I was going to say the high-end tweeters like Trump, but anybody can tweet. You follow the tweets from City Hall. It's important stuff, and it's great
that's very true.
You're there to do that, so.
Thank you. So let's get into the Canada 150, because I think it's a big anniversary, and a lot of people are talking about all the greatness of Canada. And on social media, there's obviously, you know, all the celebration stuff, hashtag Guelph on, or hashtag Canada 150. The Ward 1 studio here in Guelph produces like really lavish Guelph video. Like,
oh, yeah. Is that the one with the...
Yeah.
It's pretty slick, yeah.
Makes this town look really amazing.
Yeah, it's
yes,
a great video.
There. Oh, wait, I do live
there. But, you know, Tim Hortons is having a special roll up the rim, Canada Day, roll up the rim. And instead of saying, sore, you lost, it says, happy Canada Day, which is such a...
I thought I'd won a prize of some kind.
I know.
Because it didn't say...
Take me off. Play again.
Play again.
Yeah. So we wanted to deconstruct that a little and talk about where there's still room for improvement in Canada. I'm going to start with a very immediate thing, which is I turn on the news this morning and CTV News is losing its frickin' mind because ISIS has apparently leveled some kind of threat against Canada, and it's all about, are we doing enough to be safe? Are we doing enough? Could there be an ISIS-inspired attack? We're putting a barricade so there's not one of those vehicular attacks like on London Bridge. Like, are we going to be safe? Are you going to die going to Canada today? I don't know. And it's just like, and I'm just like, shut up. ISIS will threaten your dog just to make noise. Yep. You know, your dog has done nothing to ISIS, but, you know, and I said this before on the show, ISIS would take credit for destroying the dinosaurs if they thought, if it suited their interests. And it's just completely off the deep end. I didn't see this story really on any other media source. It was kind of a CTV exclusive, like, oh, we got these memos
exclusive
from the Mounties. Yeah,
just,
it was exclusive fear, but
yeah.
Just the tone of it struck me as really inappropriate and ham-fisted. It's like, yes, would a process story about security be warranted and interesting? I think so. But to start ringing the shark bell that, you know, sharks in the water and having Chief Brody, you know, screaming at people to get out of the water, I don't think helps.
Did they have that doom wash music with that dun, 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 topping the news, ISIS?
I don't remember that. And they didn't go that far.
And yeah, I think we could probably understand why ISIS is yipping, because we've heard so much over the past little while about this long-distance sniper shot, which also comes with some conditions in that, okay, we're not really in a combat role. We're supposed to be training people. Why are you plugging guys 3.5 kilometers away, good or bad, right? There's real issues with that. And of course... Trudeau came out and said it's something to the effect of it's a good thing that we're doing this. I mean, that's probably a completely different topic, but you can see why ISIS are angry. Believe me, I'm not coming to their defense. I want them to go away like anybody else, but are we in a combat role or aren't we? And that became an issue.
Yeah.
But getting back to the 150, as I was sort of commenting on before, I get that there's just two channels I get from this. One is that a lot of people really want it to be 1967, which Pierre Burton even wrote a book about the last good year. Everything from the logo, which is an echo of that 67 logo. You've seen it. It was the triangles of the provinces and the two territories at the time. They've just added some triangles and jazzed it up a bit. The other thing is, it's become a bit, and you were talking about it too. You hinted at it. It's become a bit of a logo.
Yeah.
In that everything that I've seen commercial-wise that didn't come from the government is, hey, it's Canada 150. Buy this Oka cheese. Go to Tim Hortons and eat a Timbit. It's been corporatized to a degree. Now, I know the government has spent, $500 million on all sorts of projects. I think they probably spent way less than that in 1967. A lot of projects were local. So, and, you know, funds locally raised and sort of more grassroots. And then everything from the arena on up was named Centennial this, Centennial that. I think the spirit was a bit different at the time. Now it's just like, you know, support your nation by buying certain products. Because I had one of the flags with the 100 logo on it for years. And it was made in Lakeview, which is where I grew up in Mississauga. But I mean, all the new ones is just China. So, all the new swag, let's say, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to celebrate. But as you were also saying, and you talked about off the top there about the teepee, they're losing their minds over this illegal teepee.
They arrested like 10 people.
And it's very surprising that it was, there are other tents there. If you look at the pictures, like probably the beer tent or whatever they had in the security tent, whatever the heck else is going on.
Yeah.
Very interesting spot where they erected it in this kind of like probably the last available patch of grass. They put this up, and it's probably going to stay.
Yeah.
And It's probably also, I believe, the kind of thing that's going to be co-opted, because you can bet that Bono, who's making an appearance with you too, is probably going to make a beeline for the thing.
Bono's going to ride that like Slim Pickens.
Absolutely. And it's like, isn't it great we're, you know, doing this with our...
You don't know the Irish accent. Isn't it great that we're recognizing the indigenous people? Okay, it's not right edge.
Thanks, Scotty. Captain, it's Canada 150. So that's... And part of that, an extension of that too, with U2 coming, and I think they're playing Cleveland in the evening, is that we're all... It's a Canadian preoccupation. Always has been, I think, that we're very concerned about how other people see us.
Yeah.
So if Bono's coming to the party, then we're cool because we got Bono at the party, beyond Lightfoot and the French act that nobody beyond Quebec knows that's going to play. Nothing against the French acts, but I'm always... I love to see them because it's like, oh...
Rock voisine?
It was Rock voisine for years. I don't know who it'll be this year. But another thing, too, is are our Tribe Called Red playing? We played them on the show before. I'm not sure if they're playing, but in my feed today, getting back to the corporate thing, it was something to do with Apple, and it was sort of a wash of footage of Canada, and A Tribe Called Red was the soundtrack, and I was like, wow, everybody's sort of getting in on this. Hey, let's, nothing against Tribe Called Red, but it's like, maybe they don't even know that the song is being used or somebody's paying the rights to that. So
one thing I'll say about the corporate thing is when they introduced that Canada 150 Tim Hortons Cup, my first thought was, that somebody threw up Canada because it was all these little sketches.
It was like a beaver and a nookshuck and then a donut.
It was Canada throw up. And that was the I don't know if that's the genre they were going for, but I that's what it is. I'll level another one of my criticisms, which is, and going back to Andrew Scheer, it's like I desperately want a conservative party I could conceivably vote for. This is the thing I find about Scheer is he's going back to the Harper playbook. Yeah. I was like, we're going to do an elected Senate. And I when I went to the debate at Eglinton in Toronto, I was at the Andrew Scheer, I don't want to call it a booth because there wasn't a booth, booths, but it was like the Andrew Scheer table.
Area.
First thing mentioned was like, he's a social conservative. And I'm like, I don't care. You're not going to get my vote being a social conservative. I mean, unless...
Obviously not. Yeah.
Unless it's about, you know, I am a religious person, but I recognize we live in a secular country and they're made up of numerous religions, so I'm not going to force my religious views on you and make it about what I believe. That's fine. You can be a religious person. You can go to your church every Sunday. You can believe that, you know, I don't know, that abortion is wrong. But you know what? You don't impose that on the rest of a society, especially when it's a secular society. And going back to things like the environment, we had Michael Chong in here last week, who was like one of the few conservatives to say, you know what, carbon taxes aren't bad.
To which he was booed, right?
Which he was booed.
Regularly.
Right. Yeah, it's almost surprising that he made it that far in the race, considering, but I digress. And then on top of it all, Andrew Scheer was you know, he had a board member of the Rebel Media, like, running his campaign.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And it's like, I do not want our politicians attached to Institute. And he goes on the Rebel, like, on a whim. I'm fine with the Rebel. I understand the Rebel's right to exist.
Sure.
But we can't not recognize the implications of having a rebel in Canada, because I'm watching that movie happen in the United States right now.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing you can't deny is that the rebel is cash flush. And when
Where does it come from, Adam?
Well, that's a great question. But whenever Ezra Levant puts out the call for I need money for this, or I have an employee who's going to make a ruckus at Julius Caesar and get arrested, send me some money, you know, so we can get her out of jail or whatever.
Well, she was acting on her own accord, didn't you know? It's nothing to do with working for the rebel.
That's the sticky wicket.
That's the official line.
So, conservative, I think, used to mean something different.
Yeah.
And didn't just mean, like, right-wing at the expense of everything. And so that's just my birthday wish for Canada. It's like, I want a conservative party I could conceivably vote for at some point.
Well, there was a poll out. We were talking about Justin Trudeau before. In terms of approval ratings of the leaders, I think he's clocking in at 53% at the end of term there.
Mm-hmm.
In the same poll, it was mentioned that 50% in this poll didn't know anything about Scheer, who he was.
Yeah.
But then again, there was 80% didn't know who the best NDP leader would be. So it's incremental down the chain as to, like, who knows what about whom.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you know, directly. And that's a good point, too. And I wonder. I wonder about our nation and its future. Just getting a couple of more points, too, in that, you know, sort of harkening back to the teepee going up. I think in the past with that incident and other things happening this week, that it really is becoming about reconciliation with Indigenous peoples in the lead up to Saturday. Mm-hmm. Now, who's to say that? I mean, something will probably happen. There will be Indigenous people obviously participating in the party on Saturday. That's a certainty for sure. But a lot of the commentary I've seen too is that, okay, you're spending $500 million on this party, but yet you've got this the obvious legacy of colonization in place. The renaming of the Lange Van Bloc. What's that? I thought I was going to say something about clones.
No. I'll get to it in a minute.
Cloning Canada. It almost came out that way. But cloning Canada. And sort of the disparity between the First Nations in the country, sort of like, you know, the number of children in care, high suicide rate, lack of clean water, subpar housing, things that we've talked about in this show many, many times. And something else that came up, too, was that, and it came up in my feed by accident, because I think I was looking at, you know, 1967, the comparisons was, and this is getting back to the sort of star power of the thing, there was an amazing film of Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, who were at Expo 67. It's very well filmed for the day. The quality is high, doing Ain't No Mountain High Enough. And they were hired to be, quote, This was in the notes. Two young Negro lovers out for the day at Expo 67. That is a direct quote on what it said. So, yeah, it was like, I guess there were some accusations even back then that was like, oh, you know, this isn't diverse enough. Now, diverse in 1967, I think, meant something different than it does today. It obviously did. But, yeah, I thought that quote was really weird. But at the same time, I still think a bit of that is happening with, you know, the arrival of Bono coming. It's like, okay, we need to get people in from elsewhere. It's, hey, it's Marvin Gaye, or hey, it's Bono, and hey, it's... I think we have enough talent in the nation across, from coast to coast to coast, who can handle it, but we'll see.
But this is the thing. It's like, in the 80s, there was this... I understand why we sort of look to American, pop culture in the 80s when, you know, you had... Canada-wise, the music was Glass Tiger and Rock Voisin and Brian Adams and Anne Murray. It's like, yeah, but and you know,
Anne, what happened to Anne Murray?
I know. Thank you.
Bring back Anne.
But yeah, there's so many acts now. It's insane. You know, I have a thing for like stupid teen shows, and there's like an episode of One Tree Hill where they're talking about the Constantines, which is a Guelph, which was at the time was like a Guelph band. This was like 2004, 2005, and it's like they're talking about the Constantines. Mm. So why don't we have the Constantines anyway? Before we depart, bring
what were you laughing at earlier? Maybe.
I'll get to that in a second. Okay. I do want to make this point because it sort of ties into something else that happened this week. But one of the things I want, you know, where there's a lot of talk right now about the press and how we're going to fund the press, and you know, are we going to get a slush fund to bail them out, what have you? I just from watching local news every night, I made a list of stories I never want to see again. And if the press wants to justify giving them, you know, sort of grant money and tax money to keep them going, I have to stop seeing stories about when it's really hot and when it's really cold.
Yes, you're right.
I can open a window. I don't want to see stories about parking at the mall at Christmas. I don't want to see stories about the great shopping there is on Black Friday and Boxing Day. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see stories about how traffic is being messed up because of construction, either because they're building new developments or what have you, or they're putting in wonderful infrastructure like the LRT, or having to replace a darn water main. What's the alternative when you have to replace a water main? Let it like fall apart and then have the road collapse? I hate that stuff. It's nuts. If the press wants to sort of justify its existence, stop doing this kind of BS. Gas prices, too, is another thing. I saw this when I was doing research for the
like
show today.
It's like every day.
It was like, gas prices are going to be down for the first time in 7 years on Canada Day. Who cares? Get a life. The guy Stop driving as much then.
The guy I saw in the monster truck at Canadian Tire looks like it would take about $300 to fill it to drive exactly. down to the liquor store or something.
Before we take a break, this is the fundraising email that the Ontario NDP just sent out. And it comes from Oliver Paré, the digital director of Ontario's NDP. And they're like fundraising big time because the Ontario elections in less than a year.
TikTok.
Throughout the matching campaign, I can't stop thinking of my favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, Double Impact.
Now I know why you're laughing.
In the movie, Van Damme's character is reunited with a long-lost twin, and they team up to avenge their father's death. That story may be somewhat preposterous, but I'll tell you what isn't. Giving $5 or more to Ontario NDP today means your donation has doubled, and so is your impact. Well done, Oliver.
Oh, I'm reaching for my wallet now. The fivers are flying out of it.
So we're going to take a break for music and bring in Councillor Downer, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Open Sources on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
My name is Maheen, and you're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
And that was The Pursuit of Happiness. Not a new song, but a CD new into the station. It seems CBC is releasing a whole bunch of Brave New Waves recordings from back in the late 80s and early 90s. So if you're a grunge person or Gen X like me, you'll know about those. That song was called My Neighborhood, Pursuit of Happiness. Impossible to miss that guitar sound. So
that's not the only oldie CBC is releasing this week.
What's...
You know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
Mansbridge.
Oh, good one. We need a little splash in here. Yes.
When's his last show?
Yeah, the last show is Saturday. Okay. It's
Canada Day. How
it's
apropos.
The official Canada Day. And, you know, I was going to say he got weepy-eyed, but he has no human feeling. So, it was his last show in studio last night, and he was like, I want to thank everyone in studio.
Now anyway. I need a nap, yes.
Yeah. Well, we're not here to talk about beer beverage.
It's another show.
We can.
That's right.
That voice you are hearing is Kathy Downer, Ward 5 City Councilor, and a returning champion, we like to say, to the show. Kathy, thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me. It's always great to be in my ward.
Safely ensconced.
Safely in the ward.
Safely ensconced in the 5. We were talking before, during the music was on, the big issue the other night was waiting pools. I did note that it was about an hour and 20-minute discussion versus the 20-minute discussion on
Seriously?
The same... Yeah, oh, yeah. At Committee of the Whole. But I wanted to phrase it this way, because it does seem to me like things are getting maybe a bit more political, that, you know, arguments are being a little more pointed, that people seem to be thinking about re-election time, and you are a veteran of council, so, you know, is that your feeling, too, that maybe we're trying to get a bit more political now?
Yeah, I think it started a few months ago. So I think we started seeing sort of people, you can see sort of people weighing out their platforms and thinking, oh my God, it was a year and a bit away. I better do something, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Better get in the waiting, wait in the waiting pool debate. Mm.
So, you know, you do see that. You do see people weighing in on certain things that they've been, you know, fairly quiet about, and sort of rather than being silently agreeing or disagreeing with things, they'll speak up about those issues and mm-hmm. Doing a bit more advocacy work. So yeah, but that's I don't remember it as being as obvious like years ago when I was on council. But you know, years when I was on before, we only had 3-year terms. So
that's right.
Like barely got, you know, into the term, and it was difficult to get things done in 3 years. But
3 years might be the sweet spot, maybe. There was also two meetings this week, and the second one was about what I call a two-in-one. One was the general meeting for Guelph Junction Railway, kind of not very controversial because it does make money for the city, but the other one was about GMHI
and Vita.
And there's some big controversy around that, although I do wonder if the controversy has passed. It seems like this year's meeting was fairly straightforward, as opposed to, I think, when this came forward last year and a lot of things were finally being talked about in public, it seems that a lot of work has been done in the last year.
So, speaking of politics, last year was very political discussion, and we didn't see as much of that last night. Clearly, there were mistakes made in the last term by Guelph Hydro or whoever was involved in that, and it has left quite a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth about the district energy. Not that district energy itself is a bad thing, but certainly how the city and Guelph Hydro and Vita tried to implement it was not in a sound way, based on a lot of assumptions that were not correct, and is now the city's paying for it. So, or Guelph Hydro is paying for it. I mean, that money could be used to reinvest to do other things, right, instead of the way it is. So that's unfortunate. And, there's still people that seem to want to make political hay out of that whole issue. And, that's fair in some ways.
Yes, I did note Christine Billings the question about per capita. Isn't this more than the gas plant scandal?
I thought that was a little far because we do have district energy is running. I mean, it's built and it's operating.
Yeah.
Not the way it should be, but it's operating. It's where those gas plants weren't even.
Yeah.
So there's a difference. But I get the point.
Yeah, and I would also say that the one was purely political.
Yeah,
and this was, I think, to go back to your point, it wasn't managed well. It was kind of a big sort of dreamer kind of aspirational project that reality couldn't reach. Mm-hmm. The eyes were bigger than the stomach.
It was a house we couldn't build.
Yeah,
that was, and it was based on some data that maybe not have been correct or some assumptions that weren't right. Like I wasn't there at that time, but it sounds like Hindsight's always a great thing, right? I don't know what they were doing. there was the oversight was not there. Whatever happened, there's a number of theories about what went wrong and how it went wrong, but it was like a perfect storm, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so people will make some political hay about that for the people that were there at the time that those decisions were made, I think, in the election. I don't know, but last night it sure sounded like it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is this case closed on this file? Like it's...
No. I don't think it is. I thought last night we made significant steps in cleaning it up. I think our staff have worked really hard in the last year, Derek, to clean this up and to get things sorted out and for us to truly understand the implications of everything. It's clearly going to take longer to figure out what we're going to do with Invita and more investigation about what we could do with these assets so that are losing money. So that's going to take some time. And with the whole issue of hydro and possibly merging, that's another complication.
Yeah. Right?
So,
In terms of what does that look like, because at the last meeting about that a couple of weeks ago, it did seem that there was confusion, and I'm not sure where it came from. But I wrote about this, and it seemed to be a moment of clarity when Andy asked, kind of very directly, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, what's wrong with Guelph Hydro?
Exactly, and I did appreciate that moment because it did seem like, and this kind of plays into what happened with online voting. It seems like there's a bit of a step was missed that, I'm not saying it was purposeful or anything, but I think there was maybe a misunderstanding in the community and apparently on council too in terms of what this is kind of meant to do.
So some of us who have been following it more and have gone, like there was an education session at Guelph Hydro for councillors, and then AMO did an education session on the way energy and electricity is moving in the province and how quickly it is moving. I think so. For some of us, we're sort of in on that, but maybe for others in the community, they're not.
Yeah.
So you're right. An education component needs to happen, but Gulf Hydro is just a distribution company. It's just the infrastructure. And we don't produce hydro other than, you know, the few things that we have, the solar panels and those types of things. But, you know, when you I always think of the bell issue and phones and cell phone issue. That is the problem that we could be facing, is that you've got all this infrastructure, but houses and companies are generating their own electricity.
Right.
through their roof tiles, through their windows with solar films on them. And once you get the battery storage is the only thing that's stopping that from people being, you know, able to generate their own hydro to service their own homes. So at that point, do you need all that infrastructure there? It's like Bell begs you to keep your landline now, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's that type of an issue. And how quickly we go there. On the flip side of that, you know, some like, and Dan and a few others have mentioned, well, but we're going to have such a demand for electricity because we're going to have electrical vehicles and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we still going to need to be part of the grid or not? So those are the things you have to weigh and how quickly it can move. But you got to remember, these disruptors happen very quickly. You got to remember film, going from film into digital was 2 years.
Yeah.
I saw a great video showing the horse and the car. That was a 10-year transition where they went from, you know, they showed a picture of downtown New York City and where there was one car and the rest was horse, and then 10 years later, it was like one horse and buggy and all cars. Like, so it's these things can happen very, very quickly. And do you merge or do you stay the same and make yourself future ready? And that was the questions I asked in that meeting. So what would the capital cost be to make herself future ready? Not the status quo, but future ready. And could we possibly do that? Or is it better for us to merge now? Because of the way things are going. So it's a difficult decision, and there's a lot of things to weigh. But I think, as Phil and some have said, I mean, standing still is not going to... Things are starting to move really quickly.
I would like to go back in time and sort of read those you know, the op-eds and things. I'm like, well, this horseless carriage isn't going anywhere.
That's
it's like,
right.
Who's going to want it? You know, got horses everywhere. Why do we need it? You know, horseless carriages.
And, you know, you hear that all the time. Like, you know, But it is like who wants a landline now? Right?
Yeah, that's true. I don't mind landlines.
We have one, but unfortunately we don't answer it. But
no, the ducts are fine. Stop calling. The ducts are good.
Who calls your landline? The duct cleaners, the computer virus people,
political pollsters.
People, doctors and dentists who I haven't given my new cell phone number to. That's the only ones, right?
Oh boy. We did want to address this too. You missed the council meeting, the very famous council meeting before the end of May, where quite nearly committee of the whole was pulled. So how would you have voted there, first of all? And then was it a conspiracy? No, I wasn't going to ask if it's, I know it wasn't a conspiracy, but it just seemed like that there was sort of an incident where I guess where there's sort of a misunderstanding between how the committee of the whole works versus how the old committee structure works. And Phil pointed this out when he was on the show, that there seems to be a growing confusion that committee of the whole is basically another city council meeting now. And I do wonder...
Well, I mean, that needs to be educated out. And actually, I didn't miss it completely, Adam. I was following you on Twitter. I was on Vancouver Island.
Coast to coast. Nice.
And my eyes went double when I saw what was going on.
Just somewhere you were at, like, a dinner table going, oh, God.
I was looking over the mountains and the ocean thinking, oh, my God. I tend to disagree with that. I think there's a confusion in some counselors' minds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the public has really thought about it too much. And I actually support the committee of the whole. I find it much easier. I used to attend all the committee meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'd go to the committee meetings, the individual committees, And then you'd come, and there'd only be four counselors there plus the mayor. And then you'd come to council and you'd have exactly the same questions and exactly the same discussion. Mm. Now we tend to have most of the discussion and questions at the committee. And if there's questions that are not able, staff are not able to answer, they can bring them back to council.
Right.
And whereas before, those questions would, for the first time, by some councilors would come up at council. So I find it more orderly for me. And because I went to all the committee meetings, now I just go to that one meeting. And I don't know that the public's that confused. As the clerk pointed out in his work, that he, the study that they did, was, you know, generally the public doesn't come to both of them. They'll go to one or the other. So I don't think it's that inconvenient. I think it's clearer. I think some counselors are still confused about how it's working and how they bring forward an issue, whereas before they talked to a chair or a committee. So I think council needs more education on having gone this way. But most cities are doing committee of the whole. There's very few that would be doing this old committee structure. And again, like, you know, that's that worry about change thing, you know.
Yeah.
I think the committee of the whole is quite good, and I hope we stay. But see, even at that committee the whole meeting that I had been at, and I wasn't at the council meeting, where we suddenly weren't going to have any meetings for the rest of the year. Some of them expressed their concern at that time, but, you know, having another 6 months of study on it, like, I thought a year would have been better anyway, so mm-hmm. I didn't really agree with the 6 months mm-hmm. study to begin with and them coming back, which some had wanted. I think it's going well and smooth, and it gives staff more predictable timelines mm-hmm. to get reports done. It's more succinct for the whole organization,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a problem for the public at all. So, you know, I don't think they colluded beforehand. but, you know, it does beg the question why 12 would support it at committee of the whole and then not that many not at without saying anything or talking to, and if I've never heard any complaints from the public, as some were saying, and if I had a complaint about an issue from the public and it was coming up on an agenda, I'd have those public people writing letters or calling counselors or showing up as a delegation, and none of them did.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought the no vote at that council was a little disingenuous because of that behavior. So
interesting. Mm-hmm. I do want to get to your favorite issue,
OMB.
Which is the OMB, because there have been changes since you were last here.
Mm.
I think I was reading up on it, and Bill Morrow, who's the municipal affairs minister, seems to think it is good enough. And in case people aren't aware, the three big changes, there's no de novo treatment of cases, which is just basically they treat cases as if the council had never reached a decision in the first place. They don't do that anymore. If a city doesn't sort of follow its own plan or its own advice, then they send it back to the city. They don't have the hearing for it. It goes right back to the city. And then there's more help being offered for people mm-hmm. who take their cases to the OMB, for the individuals, I mean. So do you agree with Minister Morrow? Is this good enough for you?
I think they've gone much further than I had anticipated. So they didn't just tweak it, which was all our fears. So mm-hmm. they went significantly quite a way with reform, and hopefully the details are good on this. And you just take a few examples. Like, it's more of an appeals body now rather than, you know, a planning board. Like it, mm-hmm. it works. So you take the 75 Dublin Street. Well, my understanding of what my reading is, as long as, you know, the plan follows the city's plans and the provincial plans, and then it wouldn't go to the OMB. Well, four stories was all that our official plan and the secondary plan said would go on that site.
Right.
So how could, under the new rules, how would that ever be able to be appealed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that things like that, I think, you know, you look at the one on Courtright and the Solstice one.
Right.
That one, significant changes were made from the original plans that were submitted to the city. That wouldn't be allowed. That would have to come back to council for consideration. You know, and that community would, and both those communities would have more help than one person at the liaison
office
that is there to handle 2,000 cases a year.
Wow.
So, I think it's much better. And the working group I was with other counselors from across the GTA, the greater GTA, we're all very pleased. They met a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't go with them, but they've sent a thank you letter to the minister. And and at AMO this summer, we'll have a session on it as well. So we're hoping. Okay. I'm just hoping to see. I'm hoping the details are as good as the way they made it sound.
Mm-hmm. You even spoke to this. They had the hearing, or one of the hearings here,
mm-hmm.
of when they were doing, I guess, their sort of exploratory feedback sessions.
Yep.
When you were doing that, what was your feeling on what the government was looking for?
Well, they had already, I thought they did an interesting thing. They came out to the public and said, these are the changes we're looking at making. And it looks like they heard it all. Like, mm-hmm. it looks like they heard everything. We had a good turnout. We invited them to come to Guelph, and that's what we had put in our motion way back when. But so I think they seemed to hear what we said about the changes we want, about the de novo, about, you know, local councils retaining control over planning in their communities rather than, you know, being able to implement the aspirations of the community. Like, our official plan from 2012 is still at the OMB, right?
Right.
We can't implement the aspirations of our community fully because of that, right? So
how does that process sort of stuck because it's already begun?
Well, yeah, we can't do anything about that now. But I am curious about the transition on this, I must say, and how they're going to manage that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So theoretically, if I were to bring an OMB case today, it would be treated under this new...
I don't think so. I think we're still under the old one.
Okay.
But, yeah,
so this hasn't...
I'm not sure how the transitions, what their next steps are yet.
All right.
I think we're waiting to hear that.
Okay. Because, yeah, I know I published a thing last year that was like a list of all the the Guelph cases still behind.
Yeah, they've been there for years. Yeah,
yeah, and the official plan is like the big one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's something coming up at committee on Monday that's like, I can't remember what it is, but it ties back to the official plan. But, you know, so we're kind of... The city, I mean, sort of flying on a wing and a prayer.
Yeah, we're having to use the old one and having regard for the new one. And, you know, we're almost at the point where you have to review the one that we did in 2012 that's still not approved. And it's all very expensive.
Yeah, no doubt.
For the city, it's expensive. And for the community, it's expensive.
Speaking of expensive, what else are you going to do this? Because I know council takes August off, but you know, when we kind of come back in the fall, it's going to be sort of starting the budget time again. But
yeah.
You know, between now and then, what are you kind of looking at?
Well, I go to Manitoulin in August with my family, and I've got an AMO conference, and then in July I have something interesting. I'm doing training with Corrections Canada on victim offender mediation with serious crimes.
Oh,
in my
cool.
other life, I'm a mediator, and I do restorative justice, victim offender mediation. And so this is a little different. It's with serious crimes, and you'll be going into prisons. And so there, I was selected to do this training.
And just so people know, tell us what AMO is again.
Oh,
AMO.
Sorry. The Association,
some people don't know.
Association Municipalities of Ontario.
Right.
Right.
We know that, but the
yeah, no, you're right. You're right. The people,
yeah,
we know
acronyms.
The code, right? We know the
acronyms. Yeah.
That's great.
So
yeah.
I sit on the board on the Ontario Association of Municipalities.
That's right. Yeah, and it's I'm glad you did ask that, because I think that's one of the things I like to do is, you know, do the explainer things, because, you know, you sit in the council meeting and you guys are, you know, your own experts on this world, and you throw around the acronyms, and it's. It's tough to follow if you don't live in the world. Kathy, how can people get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you?
Well, they can email me at kathy.downer@guelph.ca is probably the best way to get a hold of me by email.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming out, and enjoy your training and your summer, and we will have you back again soon.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And that is it for this week's edition of Open Sources. Next week, we'll have Green Party of Ontario leader Mike Schreiner on the show, so stay tuned for that. You can get in touch with us at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on the Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on the Twitter. And you can download this and other podcasts at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher. I will be back actually next Thursday early in the morning. Well, not early in the morning, but in the morning for end credits, where we have a summer home during another show's hiatus. And you can find out all about end credits at endcreditsradioshow.com. I am on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson and at guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at a place called The Spanner Book. Maybe something this weekend. Probably about the 150. I don't know.
He's the master of the tease, folks.
Spannerbook.wordpress.com.
Master of the tease.
I try.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources.